Good evening, everyone, and welcome. Thank you for joining us for the Equity Film Incentive BC campaign launch to UBCP members. The Equity Film Incentive BC is an initiative that was started by the UBCP After Women's Committee a couple of years ago and is now an effort for the entire union. On Monday, the Creative BC Labor Market Index report was released. Is it me?
No,
I think it's just my electric personality. Cutting the mic on and off. It's a hard slog to read, but it's on the Creative BC website, and it is more statistical evidence that racialized workers are underrepresented in the BC film workforce, and women are underrepresented in the BC film workforce. Our position is also that persons with disabilities are underrepresented, although there is no statistical evidence that has been collected, and Indigenous workers are underrepresented. And those are the four equity-seeking groups that we are working to advance. So with no further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Angela Moore, the chair of the UBCP ACTRA Diversity and Inclusion Committee, and Karen Wong, who is the treasurer of Women in Film and Television Vancouver. And UBCP ACTRA and Women in Film and Television Vancouver are working in a coalition. They're going to take you through what we're up to. Thank you, Christine. Thank you for coming out this evening. We acknowledge that this meeting is taking place on the unceded, ancestral, and occupied traditional lands of the Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamous Nations of the Coast Salish peoples.
For the past 20 years, our provincial tax credit programs have been a major driver of the BC film and television industry. And these are some stats from 2017. As you can see, we are doing tremendously well in our industry. The goal of tax incentives in any jurisdiction is to increase prosperity and while also fairly reflecting and supporting the values and aspirations of the tax-paying public. And from these stats, I just wanted to point out that the $3.4 billion in economic activity, half of that, 50%, or $1.7 billion, is to BC labor directly.
So who's working in this industry? 32% of women compared to 68% of men. 15% of visible minorities, despite making up 29% of BC's workforce. The important takeaway here is that Indigenous people, women, racialized, and persons with disabilities together comprise the majority of British Columbians, and they are grossly underrepresented in the industry, particularly in leadership and higher paying positions.
The goals of our provincial government, as they're stated here, Mitzi Dean, the BC Parliamentary Secretary for Gender Equity, also has an additional commitment in her mandate letter, which states, quote, "Our core work is ensuring that gender equity is reflected in government budgets, policies, and programs, and coordinating cross-government action on gender issues, end quote. Current employment patterns in BC's screen-based media industry are in direct conflict with the goals and aspirations of the BC government.
So what time is it? It's time to modernize. With BC's film industry tax credit, there is a system that was put in place about 20 years ago that has been copied by other provinces and territories. It is a tool that we can use to make to really bring our hiring practices up to speed, more modernized and equitable for all British Columbians.
Here are some positive examples of our tax credits. We have the regional tax incentive, as well as the DAVE, which is the Digital Animation and Visual Effects tax incentive. And you can see the industry impact is tremendous with these initiatives. Given the success of both these tax credits in shaping our industry, we believe that the tax credit system offers an outstanding opportunity for rapidly diversifying the workforce to reflect the BC and population, and to deepen and broaden what is now an aging talent pool to support the continued expansion of this very healthy industry sector.
So a little bit more about the actual tax credits. There are several different tax credit models. Some offer enhanced tax credits to productions to meet certain thresholds. Others require employers to meet basic levels of inclusion in order to access any tax credits. Those are the various other ones we've heard about so far: UK, Illinois, France, New Jersey, New York, and California. Many international governments and film industry stakeholders are committed through legislation to increase the diversity and inclusion through many of these different models. The old ways of doing business are no longer appropriate.
In conclusion, there is ample evidence that the hiring practices are not diverse or inclusive. Further studies, training programs, and recording strategies are part of the solution, but the path to equity is through good-paying jobs for everyone.
All right. Well, thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Did I miss one? I did. Sorry. I thought we were finished. On the actions. The Women in Film and TV proposed to Minister Baer and BC government staffers for an enhancement to our tax credits to address these issues. Last month, members of our UBCP group went to visit the ministers and talk about these things. And Karen, maybe you want to talk, because you met with Minister Baer?
No, we didn't.
Sorry. Christine.
Yeah.
I think you should talk a little bit more about it instead of me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Thank you so much, Angela and Karen. The other piece that I want to point out to members is that in 2018, our members attended the BC Federation of Labor, and we had a resolution adopted on the floor of the BC Federation of Labor, which means that this initiative of lobbying the government to use the tax credit system to modernize and give equal opportunities to all BC citizens in the workforce has the support of 500,000 unionized workers in our province, and that is huge. It took about a year and a half and a lot of push from a lot of people, but we did get in our proposal in front of Minister Baer, and Minister Bain. So those are the ministers for labor and for tourism, culture, and something else. Arts and culture. Thank you very much. They're aware of what we are trying to do. They are not making any commitments. Our initial goal was to get this policy adopted in the 2020 budget. It is fairly safe to say that it doesn't look like we achieved that goal, so now we're moving that goal to the 2021 budget, and our goals for 2020 are to get our proposal in front of the Minister of Finance, to present our proposal to a standing committee that meets throughout the summer to hear proposals from British Columbians, and to have a voice on the advisory committee that government consults and has up to date usually only had the voice of labor from 891. So we want to be included as another kind of labor that is integral to the film industry. Is everybody clear about what it is we're asking the government to do? Give producers a tax credit if they offer employment to Indigenous women, racialized, and persons with disabilities up to the percentage that they are represented in the British Columbia workforce. Okay? The one exception to that is Indigenous workers. In the spirit of truth and reconciliation, we believe that Indigenous workers should be represented in far greater numbers than their actual population, because the population of today is only those people who have survived genocide and the residential school system. Okay? All right.
Yeah. I just wanted to add that the wonderful thing about being part of the UBCP board is that when we went to Victoria, for the first time, some of the ministers and the parliamentary secretaries heard about how our industry works and how all the sort of the stakeholders in this presentation are actually reflected in the industry versus how they reflected in the actual population of BC. This is news to them. This is news. All the things that we talked about is absolute news to them, and they were really, really glad to hear about it. So all of them were on board with this. So I think it's a really positive thing that UBCP does to go there to explain about sort of our precarious work conditions that when we do work, and those who are those who benefit from who can benefit from this tax incentive. Yeah.
Thanks,
yeah. Angela. Okay, we're going to move on to the panel portion of the evening, because you have some brothers and sisters who have very kindly and bravely agreed to sit on a panel and answer some prepared questions to share with you their lived experience of the impact on their lives of the current hiring practices in BC film, and also some ideas that they may have run across that they think would be useful. So the inestimable Ellie Harvey, treasurer of UBCP Actors, is going to be our moderator. We have two representatives from the Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Dorindra and Broadus. Maya Aro is a stunt committee and a working woman. Winnie Hun, chair of the Age Inclusion Working Group. Darby Steves is a young emerging artist committee member. There's another A on the end. I can never remember what it stands for.
Assembly.
Young Emerging Artist Assembly. And James Sanders and Trevor Lerner are two of our members who are people with disabilities. Take it away, Ellie. Okay. Thank you, Christine.
I'm going to turn
this off. Can you guys make sure your mics are turned off, because we do have a little bit of tape and we're going to get horrible feedback.
Turn off your mic. I'll grab that one from you. Thank you very much, Christine and Angela, and your committees for all the hard work you've been doing, and to our industry relations. And Lisa, who's done really great work. Can you turn that off? They've asked me to moderate. I think I am the comedic sidekick. They gave me a little mic with a little wire on it. Let me out here. Okay, so basically what we want to do is to talk to some of our members and see how they feel that this will affect their lives, this kind of an initiative. So my first question will actually go to Tate, and it will be Trish Collins answering this question. And this was my question. When you were a child, did you see yourself reflected on the screen? Take it away.
Opportunity to answer some of the questions for the panel today, because I'm not in town and I'm not able to be there, although I really wish that I could have been. So I am a mixed race, Asian, Caucasian, actor, writer, and director. I also identify as bisexual. And as to the first question, when I was growing up, if I saw myself represented in the media, no. I did not see myself represented either as a mixed race young person or my identity as being a bisexual woman. And since then, I also do a lot of work with young people. I've been working in education as well as in TV and film for quite a number of years, educating young people on the media, social justice issues, deconstruction of the media, and self-representation. And I actually find oftentimes when I'm working with young people, either teaching them media production skills or creation skills or as actors, that I will have to spend a bit of time undoing some of the damage that they've accumulated from seeing either the lack of themselves represented in the media or the way that they are represented in very stereotypical or racist ways. So that's something that I think is really important, and how representation in the media.
Okay. Stop it. Okay, so. Whoa!
Hello?
Where's our
sign
now?
Thank you, I have moved. Okay, so maybe Dorindra. I got it. Tell me your experience.
Well, to answer the first question, can you hear me at the back there?
Yes. No, now you can turn the mic.
They can.
Now you can turn it on. There you go.
So, I have a different perspective on it. I wasn't raised in Europe. I was raised in Africa, in Tanzania. And yes, there was no television in Tanzania at the time. Our only influence was black exploitation movies, Bollywood movies, kung fu movies, and spaghetti western. So I saw people like myself being represented, and I grew up with a can-do attitude, you know, since I could understand language, basically. Within the genres, the dominant people were, of course, the men. Right? There was no intersectional lens between any of these genres. So the kung fu films catered to their kung fu and cultural values, the Bollywood did the same. There was a common theme though. The only place where the intersectional lens happened was when it came to women, the indigenous, or LGBTQ members. They were all at the expense of the white man, or the brown man, or the Chinese man, or however we want to call them, or whatever, you know, race you want to apply to, it was at their expense, because they were like the fall guys for, so there's a common theme, and I think you'll see through my presentation this common theme as well. So I grew up basically recognizing that I could do this, but never had the courage. The only time I had the courage was I was 13 and I saw a movie called Juggernaut, which was a disaster movie. And there was a character in that film that was an exile at sea. He was an East African person that looked like me, that was an exile at sea. And that's when the bulb lit and I thought, I can do this. So under the guise of studying economics, I told my parents I'll go to the UK to study economics. And landed in the UK, where I was baptized, not a human, but a person of color. And then my quest began to become an actor. There was no representation whatsoever. The only show that existed at the time was My Mind Your Language. Some of you are old enough like me to remember that program. and it did no justice or service to any of the ethnic minorities that were represented in that program. I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm not going to use that for the mic. Okay, so now how about, I'm going to take Maya. Maya, you're, now Maya is not the stunt committee. Too many people for her. She's actually a stunt coordinator. And I'm interested to see, growing up as a girl, where did you get your inspiration from?
Well, I definitely didn't see myself on TV. I mean, I'm a straight white woman, so there were people that looked like me, but there wasn't somebody like me on TV. So my original inspiration was Mad Max. And then finally a movie called Tank Girl came around in 1995.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry if I'm out of breath, I have a large human pushing on my lungs. And then 1997, G.I. Jane was one of the other first films actually spoke to me and was like, that's me. So yeah, I didn't really see myself on TV. I had no, there wasn't a lot of female action films. There's a few kung fu films in the 80s that had some female stars, but again, no one that really spoke to me. So I think those are the two films, the first time that I actually saw myself on TV.
Okay. All right, James, how about you?
I'm not sure if I trust this mic. Can you hear me if I don't use the mic?
Okay.
So if you, I'm sitting behind this table, so you might not see. I use a wheelchair to get around. I'm quadriplegic. I identify as a person with a disability. I didn't start using a wheelchair until I was 20. So to really honestly answer your question about how was I represented, I was hurt partway through my theater training. So I was already wanting to be an actor, and so the decision was to continue on as being an actor, knowing that this likely was going to be a big challenge, greater than just being an actor itself. What I discovered was the bulk of the roles for people with disabilities were the inspirational role or the triumph over adversity story where somebody had a problem, but because they were really good at math, they won the hearts of everybody in the audience. And that was a little bit concerning for me. So I started my path and my career to try to change that. And the way that I was practicing that, primarily through a theater company I ran, was to represent without being the issue. So we would write stories, tell stories where disability was not the central issue, but it was the landscape upon where universal issues were discussed. And this is a really winning formula because what it does is it puts the representation forward, but it's not making it why it's there. It's there because I'm playing a father, or I'm playing a professor, or I'm playing whatever, a computer technician, whatever. But it's the representation that's present. I've been really grateful because I've had enormous success. My audition to work ratio, I guarantee, is higher than anybody in the room.
Okay.
But it's because I've had so few auditions.
Okay.
And they're very specific on what they want, and I've been able, for the most part, to deliver. So when I heard about this tax credit, to me it really fits in with this outside-of-the-box casting model that I've been practicing for 20 years in my theater world. And that's being able to go to casting directors and show them stuff on tape that I can play the professor or the special advisor to the whatever. This character, this body, is interesting to look at when it comes on the screen because we don't often see it. So there's an attractiveness to diversity, that a richness to diversity that we want to see. We also don't want to forget that the biggest responsibility we have as actors is to have the chops to show up and get these jobs if they're being put in front of us. So there's a responsibility that I'm looking forward to taking and just being more active.
Awesome. Thank you. That's great. Because I want to get everyone to answer questions. The reason I asked that question was because I grew up a white girl in a white city in the middle of Saskatchewan, and my mom plunked me in front of Sesame Street, and Susan and Gordon were my friends.
Uh-huh.
And they were the first black people I knew. And I have a very different experience than my parents did with black people, and I honestly think it's because of Sesame Street. So that, for my own experience, goes to show you how representation on screen can actually have an impact. Now I'm going to ask Rodia, when you are on set, do you feel that the set reflects the world you live in as far as diversity goes?
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Come on now. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
All right now. I know it's dark and rainy outside, but we can still pump it up in our spirits. Thank to all the organizers. Thank you guys for being here today. Thank you for all the organizers for starting this initiative. I had I had answers to all four questions, so I wanted to put out for that question that you had asked
okay,
first.
Go ahead, do it.
For me, first time I saw somebody on screen that shaped my life experiences was the day I ran away from home. I was 14, and I was Mr. Big Pants, got into it with my folks, and my parents were both in the military at the time, and you know what? When I told them I announced I was going to run away from home, they actually packed my bag. And so they told me to get on and get on. Good luck. So I took myself downtown into downtown Baltimore at the time. And this is back in the days where, and I went to a movie theater. So I walked around, shot my little bit of money, and, took some things from the food stand or whatever. Then I came up to a movie theater and talked my way in, because I was always a big guy and had a deep voice when I was young, so he assumed I was older. Now, back in those days, the theaters had, they were those kind of theaters where you paid one ticket, and they showed like three or four movies in a row, and they would just show them continuously until the tape broke. So I walked in, and the day I walked in, they were showing Bruce Lee Extravaganza. They were showing Way of the Dragon, Enter the Dragon, and then the one that I really resonated with me was Fist of Fury. Because in that, you had this man, he was a working man. First of all, Bruce Lee's character, he's a working class man. He was a man who was proud of his roots. He was Chinese, and he had to deal with people who didn't appreciate Chinese people. In fact, they referred to him as the sick man of Asia, Chinese people. And so the one image from that movie that stuck with me was when he walked past a park one day and he saw a sign up on the wall that said, no dogs or Chinese allowed. And he jumped his little behind up in the air, did a kung fu kick, split that sign in half. And for me, I almost jumped up in the air because I saw somebody who understood their value and their worth. And then I said that, hey, I'm worthy and I have value and I too have a hero's journey. So that was my first thing on that. So that kind of started me to realize that, you know, people of color, a boy of color, we have a hero's journey too. So in answer to your question about the being on set, I'm blessed when I go on set every day. I thank the lucky stars that, hey, I've got another day of health, strength, and ability to walk on the set and create. But I'm also a little bit sad sometimes, because when I go on set, I don't see the richness and the fullness of our community all the time. There are times when I go on set and literally I am the only one. And that makes me a little bit sad, because I know better. And because I've seen the people, and I know we're out here, right? And so for me, what makes me excited about this initiative is that we're finally going to be able to put philosophy to practice, all right? We talk a lot of talk about equity, and with this initiative, now we can put dollars to it. Now we can encourage other people to put dollars to it. If we say that we believe in equity, this is our time to stop talking about it, start putting it together with some tax credits. Author, I'm reading a lot of his material again recently, Ta-Nehisi Coates, he wrote a comment, and I'll wrap up, and he said that, and I think it encapsulates what I'm talking about in terms of equity. You know, we are all talented. We all have chops. We are all gifted. All right, but talent is nothing without a field on which to display its gifts. And I think with equity and this equity initiative, that's what we're doing, is trying to broaden the field so we can all get on the field and play.
Thank Okay. Okay. How about you? How about you on set?
Okay.
Do you see yourself reflected on set?
Hi, I'm Darby. I am a straight, white, 23-year-old female. Yes, I do see myself reflected on set. Now, we still have a lot of work to do. Depending on the set you work on, you may see quite a few of the groups mentioned in the question. For the most part, it's still a bit of a boys' club, speaking female to male ratio. I've been on set, or a couple of sets, that are made up of 30% women, and you notice the difference. For the most part, the mood on set is calmer and can be more professional. On a set with a female director, generally speaking, the biggest difference I notice is the wonderful lack of yelling. You know. As far as diversity in the cast is concerned, the only set I worked on this year that met three of the five categories in the question was Motherland Fort Salem. I think the work that Elliot, our showrunner, did was create a strong female cast. It was incredible. No. I think the show is going to make waves in terms of opportunities for strong female leads and even open the door to more underrepresented individuals. I'm excited.
Yeah, thank you. Now, just for time's sake, I'm going to jump. And if you, there's a question that I haven't come to you for, you can answer it when I give you the mic. But I've been around long enough to know when the tax credits came into place, and I was one of the people that benefited from that because my first big role was Morticia on Adam's Family, and that was because they needed a Canadian to qualify. They could only have two Americans. So they already had them, so they knew they had to cast Morticia as a Canadian. So they looked at Toronto, and I was cheaper, because I'm here. So, and I was cheaper. In so many ways. It was because of that tax credit that I really got a leg up on my career and had significant income. And so the next question that I'm going to ask is, has anyone in this room experienced the uptick in work since the tax credit 20 years ago? And how currently would your life increase, your life improve, if this tax credit increased your work from 5 to 18%? Yeah. I'm just going to let Trevor talk to the other talk, get the Winnie, and then we'll go back.
Hi, everybody.
What's your
job? That's what everybody asks. Because you look at me and you're like, "Hey, Santa, awesome." A decade ago, I almost died from a hospital infection. It happened in Nanaimo, and over the course of 4 months, 125 people got infected and 15 died. I was stuck with this thing for 10 months. And at the end of the 10 months, my organs shut down. And there was so much damage on my body that my thyroid got destroyed. And I gained 100 pounds in 2 months. Mess load of stuff. So my levels of disability that were determined by the doctors and the insurance companies and stuff a lot of this mental stuff. I basically have a broken hard drive for a brain. It works quite a bit a lot of the time, but when it does shut down, it's that little rainbow circle or the hourglass that everybody freaking hates. For me, it was determined that the acting, because we're basically only having to focus for a minute or two at a time, and they tell us what to say, when to say, and how to say it, was the only thing that I could do with my life. And I was essentially told that this was it. I wasn't going to be able to do any job or anything, and I got to get this job and really have some fun with it. But for me, like, I basically live month to month on a disability pension, which isn't much. And in this climate that we have, where rent is going up crazy and everything's going nuts, right? Having a jump up from 5 to 18? Good Lord, that's awesome. It's life-changing, is what it is. It makes you feel like you're a person again, instead of just... Like, I live in a basement suite in Northeast Burnaby, like 200 yards from the Kinder Morgan pipeline. That's joyful. But having an increase of money where it helps me have a voice and being able to be a success again in something, it's a Christmas gift is what it would be. I really appreciate it a lot.
I'm going to talk really briefly about myself because I'd much rather talk about why I think it's really important. I do notice from 30 years ago that when I first started, I was only auditioning for character roles where I'm fresh off the boat, I don't speak English, you know, and it's really tough. Now, I do feel like I do have more opportunity for more diversity, like meeting doctor, pharmacist, you know, and I do feel like that I actually get to be an option, which is really nice as opposed to being stereotyped. But I think because I'm on the board for my fifth year, and I've been to a lot of labor conferences, and one thing that really got to me, actually, was when I was at the Women of Steel conference, and I was the only performer in the room. Nobody knew what I did. Everybody was in separate groups. And the question was to people in different groups doing different labor work, what is the major deterrent for you to get ahead in your life? In your life, not your career, and they said that they don't see themselves represented on TV. What they did matters, and that really got to me because it was such an unbiased comment to me, and it came from, you know, the heart. And I just want to mention that we don't realize this as much. This is a business. The incentives work because it's not going to be automatic. I went to the Whistler Film Festival, and I listened to an amazing panel at from Women in View, and they had all these different stats of how many women are, when women are in power, what happens. There's stats on women on diversity. There's race, you know, there's indigenous stats, and it was actually really scary of how little of that was women in power that are diverse. And the one thing that I really took away is the key thing is that when the key creative position is not only a woman, but it's a woman of color or indigenous, all women work more. It was over 56%, which is completely rare. So I want to point that out, that it's really important. And also, that also comes back to the education. A lot of times, I know that sometimes we hear, well, you know, there's not enough qualified professionals. But one of the reasons that is because a lot of people drop out because they think there's no opportunity. So if this does come into effect, it's going to hopefully encourage more people to stay in school and not drop out, to know that they actually have a chance. And one more thing, I do have to mention this because I was really hoping this would include age, and I know currently it doesn't. But I really want to mention this because it's a category where I feel like everybody's eventually going to move up to that category. So, and I know that DAX had posted a survey that the Astro National Communication sent out, and I want to mention that only 1 in 5 women say they often see women like themselves represented on screen, falling to 1 in 10 for women over the age of 65. So that's a huge concern of mine, so I did want to bring that. And I just think it's important that we ensure people from different backgrounds have the same opportunity as everybody else to reach the full potential. That's why this is happening. Thank you.
Just briefly about do I see people like me reflected in on the sets? No. Simple answer. We do see some LGBTQ community members and some women, but they're in archetypal, stereotypical jobs like hair and makeup, or wardrobe, and that's about it. Okay, so it's not just on screen, it's beyond the screen as well. To answer your question about the uptick, well, I was actually a beneficiary of the uptick. I got to a glass ceiling, having had a very celebrated career considering what I look like in the UK. I got to a glass ceiling, I left. I was running a restaurant in Windsor, Ontario, and I was discovered by the magic of the internet and the CBC to come and do a series of movies here called Jinnah on Crime, which led to, this is not about self-aggrandizing, it led to 26 people getting their first break, people that look like me, on that show. Two of them are in this group today. Okay? Yeah, I get goosebumps when I say that. So I was basically, and the search took forever. They couldn't find anybody, and ultimately it came down to me, who had quit the business and was a restaurateur in Ontario because I had my Canadian papers. And that's how I got the job. Okay? Today, well, you know, 9 years ago, I actually gave up the business again, got to another glass ceiling, a different situation. I became a parent. And because of the downturn that happened from around 2004 to 2009, I basically, when I became a parent, I needed my own sanity, my spiritual and my mental well-being. And so I left the business to raise this child. Because I wanted this child to grow up thinking, yes, I can do X2, and yes, it's in my grasp if I apply myself to it. She's now a teenager. She figure skates, she's also starting to act. I'm back in the business since the last year, and despite all my credits, despite all this talk that I hear in green rooms about, oh, they're all casting diverse, the reality is, unless, without the 9 years of resources that I've built up, that I worked in an alternate industry, I would not be able to survive. If these credits, just to give you the reality of why these credits are important, and also how much it's going to impact us, if these credits were applied tomorrow, I would probably just qualify with the way things are going, based on my income last year, to qualify for the poverty line in BC. Okay? So this is not going to turn the tide where suddenly we're all going to be employed and there's not going to be work for anybody else, because that's how diversity is being perceived out there. Diversity has become a scapegoat. Agents are telling their clients, you're not getting the job, you're not getting seen because they're all going diverse. Yeah. Yes, we are now being seen for more work. Absolutely. Absolutely, I'm being seen for Marvel movies where they're going to cast Ben Kingsley. I'm being seen for Star Trek franchise where they're casting a 25-year-old from UK. Being seen for other projects where they're casting Indians. And this is another reason why it's important to safeguard the right of working Canadians who are taxpayers in BC, because the Indians are the biggest threat. We just had a very important meeting here, the CR conference, and the vice president of the Indian Actors Union was here. They showed a movie, some of you came to see that, about the working conditions of Indians and stunt performers and so on. The Indians, in his own words, he said, we have tasted blood. They are not getting hired under SAG-AFTRA contracts. And under those contracts, they're getting paid royalties. And they want more. They want to build an alliance with us and SAG-AFTRA so that when they're hired, they get the same treatment by these, you know, these platforms like Hulu and like Amazon and Netflix that we get. The fact is that they're going to work for cheaper rates. And as a result, under the guise of authenticity, myself and my fellow actors in this room, who are actually taxpayers in BC and have contributed to the economy, will not be even given a second chance. So this is why a credit like this is important, to safeguard the rights of us as working Canadians.
We're running out of time here now as we have the membership meeting, so I'm just going to wrap it up. I want to thank everyone for coming out here and sharing your experience. Christine, do you want to have a final word? And again, thanks to the ongoing work of Christine Willis, who for years has been championing this.
I really want to give it up for our members. I wish we had 2 hours or an entire day to hear everybody's stories, but thank you so much for coming. The official launch of a campaign, and now we are recruiting you, the members. On the back table, there are postcards that, and you may have picked one up on your way in. Thank you, Dax. It itemizes what the Equity Film Incentive BC is. Please take them, spread them around, post them in places you audition, where you work, where you take classes. Take them to set. Please start conversations with people. The more support we get for the incentive, the more ammunition we have when we go back to government and say something has to change. So that's our first ask of you, the membership. And the second ask, at the very back of the hall, I'm going to put this. It's an add your name document. If you want to be kept informed about developments in the Equity Film Incentive BC, campaign, add your name. If you're willing to volunteer, add your name. As I said, our goals for next year are to get to government, but also, I didn't mention, we want to expand our coalition, and that means knocking on a lot of doors, and it's going to take all of us to get our mission accomplished. Thank you very, very much.
The Indians are
a pleasure to meet you and share the space. All the best.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for sharing the space.
Pleasure.
I learned from your work.
Thank you. Yeah, I was involved in the theater movement in the UK for many years. We worked with Grey Eye. I was in a young people's theater.
Oh, that's fine.
And Grey Eye was the first.